Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back. It's time to learn and improve your American English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with As It Is. Today, we have two stories for you to study. The first concerns religion in the Middle East. The second has some good news from the world of science. If you are ready, let's get started with part one. A new report says the number of Middle Eastern countries experiencing religious violence has doubled since 2011. The American-based Pew Research Center reported recently that the number rose from 5 to 10. The center studied violence between religious groups in the Middle East. Bob Doty has more on the group's findings.
The study found an increase in conflicts based on religious disputes. It also found that Christians faced oppression in a growing number of countries in the Middle East. Experts say nearly 1 million Christians have been forced to flee their homes in Iraq. 500,000 others have left Syria. In Egypt, attackers set fire to a number of Coptic religious centers. Yvonne Haddad teaches the history of Islam and Christian-Muslim relations at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. She says the number of Christians in the city of Jerusalem has been falling for many years.
At one time, there was an estimate that 25% of the citizens of what is now called East Jerusalem were Christian. Now they're less than 2%.
Professor Haddad says political developments and discrimination have caused the drop in the Middle East's Christian population. She says the formation of the State of Israel in 1947 resulted in displacement of Christians in the Galilee, which was mostly a Christian community. Then, the 1967 war pushed out more Christians who were living near Jerusalem. She notes that the United States-led invasion of Iraq in 2003 resulted in setting religious groups against each other. Recently, when Islamic State forces took control of some areas in Iraq and Syria, Christians were told either to accept Islam, leave their homes, or die. Some Christian leaders are appealing to the world not to remain uncaring. Patriarch Louis Raphael Seco is president of the Assembly of the Catholic Bishops in Iraq. He wrote an open letter, which was made public last month. He wrote that what has happened to Iraqi Christians and other minorities is terrible and horrible. He says urgent and effective international support from all goodwill people is needed to save the Christians and another group, the Yazidis, from dying out. The Reverend Rafaat Bader is president of the Center for Catholic Studies and Information in Amman, Jordan. He says Christians are facing discrimination throughout the Middle East. He notes that every time a constitution states that Islam is the official religion of the state, Christian citizens are not treated equally. Paul Salem is Vice President for Policy and Research at the Middle East Institute in Washington. He says Christians have become targets for militant Muslims. He hopes that the decline of the Christian population could be stopped by ending civil wars, reestablishing law and order, and fixing mistakes in laws and constitutions. I'm Bob Doty.
You are listening to The Voice of America. We are coming to you from Washington. A United Nations report says Earth's protective ozone layer is on its way to recovering by the middle of the century. The UN's Environment Program and the World Meteorological Organization released the report last week. Katie Weaver tells us more.
The new report says the Earth's ozone layer is showing signs of recovery. Ozone is a form of oxygen. It is found in the air we breathe and in Earth's atmosphere. The ozone layer in the upper atmosphere protects life on Earth. The ozone there blocks harmful radiation from the sun. But near Earth, ozone is a common pollutant. It can harm people, crops, and other plants. The UN report says the ozone layer appears to be improving because of a reduction of industrial chemicals into the air. Scientists say the improving conditions are a result of an international treaty signed in 1987. It is called the Montreal Protocol. The Montreal Protocol was meant to end the use of, or sharply reduce, over 100 known ozone-depleting substances. It banned ozone-depleting chemicals, including man-made chlorofluorocarbons, also known as CFCs. They were once widely used in refrigerators, spray cans, insulation foam, and fire suppression products. The report comes as good news for Geir Braten, a scientific officer with the World Meteorological Organization. He says a lot has changed for the better since the UN agency released its last report on ozone depletion 4 years ago.
Now, for the first time in this report, we say that we see indications of a small increase in total ozone. So that means that recovery of the ozone layer in terms of total ozone has just started. If you go more specifically at the higher level, up at 40 kilometers in the stratosphere, high above the ground, there one sees a clear increase in ozone in recent years.
Geir Braten says this is a sign that the amount of ozone-depleting gases is decreasing, and ozone levels are on the way up again. The stratospheric ozone layer is a fragile shield of gas. It protects the Earth from harmful ultraviolet radiation. The UN Environment Program says the Montreal Protocol will prevent 2 million cases of skin cancer each year by 2030. Officials say it will also help prevent damage to human eyes and immune systems, which protect the body against disease. The report finds the discontinuation of ozone-depleting substances has been good for the world climate. This is because many of these substances also are strong greenhouse gases, pollution linked to climate change. But the report shows that some substitutes are themselves strong greenhouse gases that could harm these gains. The WMO calls international action on the ozone layer a major environment success story. It is urging the same kind of unity to tackle the even greater issue of climate change. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for listening. We are here 7 days a week to help you learn English. This is the Voice of America.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. A new report says genetically modified, or GM, crops would greatly improve agriculture in Africa. The policy group Chatham House released the report. It says African governments are unlikely to approve GM crops because opponents are spreading fear about its possible dangers. Rob Bailey is a writer of the report.
They've created anti-GM campaigns based on misinformation. So, for example, alleging a link between GM crops and infertility or cancer or animal deformities, none of which is true. There's no evidence for any of this.
In Uganda, scientists are working in a temperature-controlled laboratory. They are developing what they call a golden banana. They say it will be stronger and will have higher levels of vitamins and minerals than traditional bananas. Priva Namanya is one of the researchers.
We have been able to show that we can increase our vitamin A levels 6 times.
Rob Bailey says GM crops offer the best hope of increasing productivity and dealing with climate change in Africa. Opponents of GM crops also argue that they are costly to grow. They say they do not produce more than non-GM crops. They say GM crops require more use of chemicals than traditional crops. And they say that companies that support GM crops are more interested in making money than in helping poor farmers grow more crops. Tete Narty grows pawpaw, maize, and other vegetables near the Ghanaian capital, Accra. This year, Ghana approved a test of GM grains like cowpeas. Mr. Narty disagrees with that decision.
And anything that is not natural, it has got its bad sides. Yes, if it is not natural, then be very careful. Because at the end of the day, we start taking GM products. But who has done the research?
Ghana's government says it has put strong laws in place to guard against problems from GM crops. Soren Ambrose is with the group Action Aid. He says increasing the amount of food using GM crops is not a good way to end food shortages in Africa.
It's not so much the problem of producing food as it is the problem of getting the food that is produced to the people who need it.
Bernard Gurry works at Ghana's Center for Indigenous Knowledge. He is worried that GM crops could force many of Africa's millions of small farms to stop growing food.
This is against our sovereignty. It is another form of colonialism where gradually the developed world is conspiring to take over our whole food system in terms of taking over our land, taking over our seed, and taking over the whole farming food system.
I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, This is Science in the News. I'm June Sims.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Today, we examine recent findings about how intelligence develops in babies. We look at when and how babies learn, and the importance of early contact with languages.
Not long ago, many people believed that babies only wanted food and to be kept warm and dry. Some people thought babies were not able to learn things until they were 5 or 6 months old. But doctors in the United States now say babies begin learning on their first day of life, and even before birth. The Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development is a federal government agency. The institute says babies are strongly influenced by their environment. It says a baby will smile if his or her mother does something the baby likes. A baby learns to get the best care possible by smiling to please her mother or other caregiver. This is how babies learn to connect and communicate with other people. The researchers say this ability to learn exists in a baby even before birth. They say newborn babies can recognize and understand sounds they heard while they were still developing inside their mothers.
Recently, an American study of 112 babies found they learned better when they were sitting up, not lying down. The babies appeared to learn better whether they were sitting up on their own, sitting in seats, or helped to sit up. Researchers with North Dakota State University and Texas A&M organized the study. The researchers say sitting up had what they called a profound and significant effect on the baby's ability to learn about objects. They say the body position may be linked to development in the brain. One organizer of the study says babies can pay more attention to exploring an object if they do not have to worry about balancing themselves. A report on the study appeared in the journal Developmental Psychology.
Underweight babies born with a shortage of the mineral iron may develop problems with thinking and behavior. Studies have shown that adding iron to the baby's food prevents developmental problems in more than one-third of those born with an iron deficiency. Magnus Domeloff heads the pediatrics department at Umeå University in Sweden. He says low birth weight babies, those weighing from 2,000 to 2,500 grams, look normal. Yet, about 30% of them are iron deficient at 6 months of age. Mr. Domeloff says 10% of them develop a condition called iron deficient anemia. He says that as the children get older, iron deficiency can lead to behavioral disorders compared to babies treated with iron supplements.
Mr. Domeloff and his team studied 285 low-weight newborns. They gave the babies iron droplets every day for 6 months. Another group of 90 infants received drops of sugar water that contained no iron. The boys and girls were examined 3 years later. only 3% of those who got iron drops showed behavioral and cognitive problems. But 13% of those who got the sugar water had problems. The lack of iron did not seem to affect the results of intelligence tests taken by the children. Mr. Domoloff admits his study involved a small number of children. But he says it is the first study to show a direct link between iron deficiency and development-related attention and emotional problems in low birth weight babies. He says such babies are often ignored in research because they do not appear to have problems.
There are about 5% of all infants in the U.S. They are quite often neglected in studies, even though the few studies that have been performed actually show that these babies are at increased risk for behavioral problems, for cognitive problems, school problems, like that.
Mr. Domoloff says even if a breastfeeding mother is taking iron supplements, that iron does not pass to her child through her breast milk. Iron-deficient children must take iron supplements directly with their food. He plans to examine the boys and girls from the earlier study in a few years to see if their intelligence test results have been affected. The World Health Organization says iron deficiency is the most common micronutrient disorder worldwide. WHO officials also say iron deficiency is a leading cause of anemia. About 2 billion people suffer from the disorder, and 40% of preschool children are believed to be anemic. Low iron levels are partly involved in 20% of maternal deaths. The report on low birth weight babies was published in the journal Pediatrics.
Experts say the first 3 years of a child's life are the most intensive period of language and speech development. This is the time when the brain is developing. Language and communication skills are believed to develop best in an environment that is rich with sounds and sights. Experts say children should repeatedly hear the speech and language of other people. America's National Institutes of Health says evidence suggests there are important periods of speech and language development in children. The ability to learn a language will be more difficult if these periods pass without early contact with a language.
The first signs of communication happen during the first few days of life, when a baby learns that crying will bring food and attention. Research shows that most children recognize the general sounds of their native language by 6 months of age. By that time, a baby usually begins to make sounds. These sounds become a kind of nonsense speech over time. By the end of their first year, most children are able to say a few simple words, although they may not understand the meaning of the words. By 18 months of age, most children can say between 8 and 10 words. By 2 years of age, most children are able to make simple statements. By ages 3, 4, and 5, the number of words a child can understand quickly increases. It is at these ages that children begin to understand the rules of language.
Some children grow up in homes where more than one language is spoken. Understanding two languages can help children as they grow older. However, studies show there is a more immediate effect of bilingualism on babies' brains. Researchers at the University of Washington organized one of the studies. They measured brain activity to compare babies in bilingual families to those in homes where just one language was spoken. Researchers called these single-language families monolingual homes.
The researchers studied babies who were between 6 and 12 months old. The babies were not yet saying words in any language. The youngest monolingual babies were able to recognize a difference between a language used at home and another language. But by 10 to 12 months of age, the monolingual babies were not identifying the sounds of the second language, only the main language spoken in their home. By comparison, the bilingual babies did not differentiate sounds of different languages spoken to them between the ages of 6 and 9 months. But between 10 and 12 months, they could identify the different sounds of both languages.
Another study has shown the effect of early education on future learning abilities. The study followed more than 1,300 children from birth through the ages of 10 or 11. It found that children who received higher quality care before starting school had better language skills by those ages than children who had lower quality care. The study is said to be the largest, longest-lasting, and most complete study of child care in the United States. The children studied were born around 1991 in 10 areas. Researchers examined the quality and amount of child care the children received until they were 4 and 1/2 years old.
The researchers then examined each child's performance in school and social development and looked at the quality of classroom education and parenting. They found children who had received higher quality child care showed better ability in tests of language skills. The study found that the link between high quality child care and better test results continued as the children grew older. It also found that the children's ability was not dependent on the amount of time they had spent in child care.
This Science in the News was written by Brianna Blake. Our producer was June Sims. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm June Sims. Join us again next week for more news about science on The Voice of America.